I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here in the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. Hey, listen, let me ask you this. If I could tell you something that would fill your heart with joy, that would make you feel great as we move into the end of the year and in the holiday season and where we're going, or really any time during the year, would you be interested in that? Well, I think you would. I think anybody would. And that's why I want to talk for a minute about gratitude. And what does it mean to be grateful? Now, I say here all the time when I come on the show how grateful I am that you are out there listening. You know, there are people that will write to me, they send texts, they send emails, and they say they like the program, you know, they like the energy that we put out here. I'm very appreciative of that, and I'm very grateful to the people that would take busy time out of their lives to turn on AmericaOutLoud.com every weekday at 3 p.m. and listen to me. So, gratitude. But isn't it more than just being grateful that, you know, you have something? You know, gratitude, doesn't it go deeper than that? Well, I got to say, first of all, when it comes to the Paris Peace Accords, the Paris Peace Accords were during the Vietnam War, trying to end that war. And the Paris climate change situation is about climate change. And the reason I say that is because I'm very grateful to one of our listeners out there that actually wrote in and told me I was confusing the two. And I appreciate that. See, I'm never one to be shy away from a criticism if it's real, you know, and I didn't realize I was conflating the two just because of the word Paris. So I want to thank you, my listeners out there, who are willing to take the time not only tell me that, you know, you like the show or you enjoy spending time here, but that you can help me be better. I am always grateful for anyone who can help me be better. Going to church the other day, sitting there, listening to the sermon, okay, to the priest. And sometimes, I have to tell you, sometimes you really are connected to it, and sometimes you're not. Interesting how you can be connected to the message. But one thing I have always found, my entire adult life, you know, going to church, we started going to church regularly. I was raised, you know, as a Catholic young man. We made all our sacraments. My mother and father made sure of that. We went to church on Christmas and Easter, and we would go to a funeral mass once in a while. It wasn't until, my father, I've told the story before, he died when he was 37 years old. He was a very young man. He had a massive heart attack while we were on a hunting trip, which is a whole nother story. But the reality was, I saw my dad probably for the last year or so of his life. All of a sudden, he was an electrician, hardworking guy, very loving man, great to his wife and his kids. But I noticed my father sitting reading the Bible. Now, not for hours at a time. The guy worked all day. He was out of the house at 5:30 in the morning to get home till 6:30 at night. Had dinner and usually fell asleep in the chair. But every once in a while, I noticed that last year of his life, he was reading the Bible. I saw it in his hand a couple of times, and he's reading away. And I remember asking him, you know, what are you reading the Bible for? You know, what's up with that? And his answer was very simple. He says, you know, I'm just trying to figure it out. I'm trying to figure out where I am in all of this. I'm very grateful to God for the great life he's given me, and I'm just trying to figure it out. And I put that into perspective at that moment. You know, I liked my dad. I thought he was a great man. And even as a young kid, I was, 12 or 13 at the time. I said, wow, that's pretty cool that my father is trying to figure it out. I wasn't really sure what he was trying to figure out. As I got older now, I kind of get it. I'm on my journey, and I'm trying to figure it all out, where I belong, who I am, how I fit into God's plan, and what God's plan is, you know, because, you know, sometimes God's plan doesn't exactly match what we want to do. So anyway, my father saying that was important to me as I grew up. Little did I know, a year or so later, that he would die. And then I found out from my mom, as time went by, that apparently he was having all kinds of, you know, heart symptoms, heart problems. As a young man of that age, he was having, you know, chest pains. And this is going in the mid-1970s, when they knew, you know, about atherosclerosis and you know, they knew about it, but they wouldn't expect it to attack such a young man. But the reality was, he probably got scared into that. He was having some chest pains. He was going to a heart doctor. My brother and I, we didn't know that. You know, we had no idea that my father was going through that. But the reality is, when I look back now, and there he was in that last year reading the Bible, he must have been shaken up, must have been scared, must have had an incident or two that, first of all, sent him to a cardiac doctor. But then to get him to reading the Bible. And I guess it was good because less than a year later, he did pass. And I'm sure that his reconnection with his God was probably helpful when he got there to the proverbial pearly gates and had to see if he could get in to paradise there. So gratitude. I was grateful to my father for giving me that insight into, hey, if somebody like him can be searching, maybe I should be searching. And over the course of my young life into adult life as I had kids, I've been on that search. You know, when my youngest son, my oldest son, Joe, was born, it was something that Kathleen and I had talked about. You know, we really should get back to church. We really want to set an example for our children. At the time, we didn't know we would have four children. We just knew we would have a family. And it was actually Kathleen who was saying, you know, I really think we really should get back into church and make it a regular part of our life. And both of us were open to it. So we did. And we've gone to church literally every Sunday. My son Joe just had his 35th birthday. Can you believe that? I have a kid who's 35 years old. It's shocking to me. But the reality is we've gone just about every Sunday, unless somebody was sick or we were away for some reason, for the last 35 years. And it has really added to my life. It has been a great benefit to my life and to my family's life. It has helped us through some very difficult times. You know, it's not the good times that you turn around and you think about God. Oh, yeah, that's wonderful. It's during the bad times. And I always hated the idea of being, you know, the fair weather friend. Hey, I'm there when things are good, but when things are bad, I don't turn to you, or I don't think of you, or I don't even explore that idea. So I'm grateful. I'm grateful to have a faith, especially at this time. There's a lot of people hurting right now. You know, the whole COVID mess, you're seeing this PTSD that I've been predicting for a long time. You're starting to see it really start to appear in more and more places, and it's going to only increase because the lockdowns are continuing. We see New Jersey tightening up. We see California locking down solid again. Well, I think other blue states are going to follow suit. It's both a power situation where they want power over people. They want to control what goes on. But I think it's also a fear. There's a fear thing going on with this COVID. So we're seeing this, and I'm grateful that we can go back to church. Now, we saw the Supreme Court recently in a 5-4 decision. How grateful are all of us who care about the ability to go to church and worship, or wherever you worship, synagogue, mosque, church, doesn't matter, where the Supreme Court, on a 5-4 ruling, do you see how important Supreme Court justices are? On a 5-4 ruling, including Ms. Barrett, right? Amy Coney Barrett made the difference because John Roberts abandoned the conservative point of view once again and voted with the liberal wing, which I think he's going to probably end up there. He's given all indications that on major issues, he will vote with the left. And I think we're going to lose him, unfortunately. But we have Amy Coney Barrett, and we have, you know, Gorsuch, and we have Kavanaugh, and we have Justice Thomas and Sam Alito. We've got five really good conservatives who look at the Constitution, and I am very grateful for that. I'm grateful that President Trump kept his word and picked very conservative justices, because that most recent judicial answer that they came down with was that you cannot limit people's ability to worship and go to church. You can't do it. Now, it was a case in New York brought by a group of priests and a group of rabbis who were fighting that, saying, you know, you can't keep open abortion parlors, bars, and bicycle factories and close down churches. You got to make better choices than that. And the court sided with that opinion. And now, whether or not the bishops, you know, that's a whole nother argument that we can have here, if our bishops are going to do the right thing and grow some guts and open up. But the reality is, I'm very grateful that we have the Supreme Court justices that will look at the Constitution and not be activists, right? Not be progressive activists like it looks like John Roberts is turning out to be. He's not looking at the Constitution. He's trying to figure out what he thinks is the right direction for the country to go, and he's going to make decisions based on that. Now, I could be completely wrong, and I hope I am wrong, but the evidence seems to be there for all of us to see. And I'm grateful that he's showing us who he is, right? Now maybe we can go back and figure out what was it about him we thought would be good, so when the next picks are made, we can pick good justices again. So, gratefulness. Being grateful on a deeper level. I am very grateful that I was born here in America. I'm very grateful for that fact. You know, I look around and I see the rest of the world, and you see the way other people live, either because of the way their governments treat them, the way their resources are divided up, the way their country has just been developed over a lifetime compared to America. Now, I'm sure there's a lot of people that would say America is a horrible way to live and we should go live in other ways. Well, you know what? There's airplanes that fly to those places, and I would encourage anyone who thinks that you think there's a better way of life somewhere else, get on an airplane and go there. Go. What are you waiting for? Right? There is no dress rehearsal for any of this. There is only do or don't do, right? And if you think it's better somewhere else, pack your bags and go, right? I would encourage you to do that. Live the life you want to live. But me, I'm very grateful that I'm an American. You know, I look back and I see the sins of the past, and I see how we have, as a people, as a nation, all of us, have really fought to change those things, sometimes very quickly. Sometimes it has taken much longer to make things better. But the history of our country is that we always make things better. We always strive to do the right thing, right? It takes us bumps and grinds to get where we got to go, but we always end up doing the right thing in the long run. This most recent election cycle is presenting us with a great challenge. A great challenge. Was the election stolen? Or did people legitimately vote for Joe Biden? And that's what they wanted to do. They wanted to go backwards. I don't know. Right now, we don't know because we don't have all the evidence. No one's actually looking at the evidence. And that I'm a little concerned about. You know, I'd like to say I'm grateful that we're having this battle to let's figure it out. But we're not really having much of a battle. The president's team is trying. They're doing what they can. As far as we can tell, we can't really see what's going on. But we know time is running out. And January 21st shows up, the new president is sworn in, you know, every 4 years, and our country will have to deal with whatever that is on that day. But for right now, I am proud to be an American. I'm proud of all of us who care about the Constitution, who care about each other, who care about religious freedom, who care about individual freedom and liberty. These are all extremely important to each and every one of us as people. And I think as time goes by, we're going to see that more and more. I think the COVID pretty clearly has demonstrated how important individual liberty can be to you as a person. You know, they lock us down again. Who was it? One of the guys that Joe Biden's considering appointing came out and said the other day, and I'm going to paraphrase this because I don't have it exactly right, but he said something about we could lock down for 5 more months, solid lockdown across the country, pay everybody's bills, and that would wipe out the COVID. Could you imagine if they came out and said, we're going to lock down solid January through the end of May, and we're going to send everybody checks so that you could pay your bills? Well, first of all, who are you sending checks to? If my expenses are $25,000 a month, you're going to send me $25,000, but my cousin, his expenses are only $4,000 a month, he only gets $4,000, so I'm going to get $25,000 and he gets $4,000? You don't think that's going to cause a problem? Or do we all get 50? Give everybody 50,000. Now, wait a minute, is that fair? Because I got 25,000 in expenses. He only has four. That means he gets, 46,000 of spending money, where I don't. You see what I mean? Is that what we're going to do? Are they going to lock us down and tell, hey, we're paying your bills, so stay home? Will half of our population, more than half of our population, applaud that idea and say, what a great idea. I get to stay home, get paid, and not have to do anything? That is dangerous, and I think that puts us in a position with, once we get locked down like that and we accept it, once we accept that, what happens when they get to month 5 and they go, you know what, it's not gone yet, we got to do this for another 2 months, then another 3 months? Then they start deciding who should move where. You should move out of this area and move here. Get away from that COVID or whatever it is. And I know my thoughts are far afield today, my friends. But I'm just trying to put all this into perspective. Like my father said, I'm trying to figure it out. And, you know, we're into the end of the year, the holiday season. We're moving forward. There's a lot for us to think about, and this is how we hash it out. We actually sit and think about it. We come up with ideas and concerns. And my theme that I wanted to start with, being grateful, really comes out of that. I mean, I am grateful to my company that kept me employed this whole time. You know, they had a choice to make. What are they going to do? Were they going to lay people off, or were they going to do everything they could to keep everybody working so that we could make it through this? I'm very grateful for them. They did a wonderful thing. I went out of my way to be as generous as I possibly can because I'm grateful for people who did things for me, and now I'm trying to do things for those other people. So I guess it's a pay it forward kind of a thing. You know, you go to a restaurant. We forgot how easy that is to do and how much fun to just go somewhere and have somebody bring you dinner. But you go somewhere, and normally, you know, what do they tell you? The tipping is 18 to 20%. Well, you got to think about these men and women who were the servers, the cooks, the busboys. My kids all did those jobs, right? My kids did those jobs. And so now I try and do 25 or 30%. You know, it's not a lot. It's not a lot more to add to the bill. But it could make a big difference to that young person or that mom or that dad that's working now in the restaurant industry trying to make a living. They've been out of work for months. And now they're back. So a couple extra bucks that come for me. It's not a lot. It's not that big a deal. But if I can help them, I try. I'm trying to be grateful more than just in words. It's one thing to be grateful and say, oh, I'm so grateful. To actually show it, to show your gratitude is a way to actually be grateful and not just talk about being grateful. Right? Now, I don't want to beat that word up, grateful, 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 grateful. How many times can I say it? But that is my theme here. You know, we're into that season. We're going to go into the winter, and we're going to find out what's going to happen to all of us. You know, our lives are going to change in the next couple of months, and we need to all be ready for it. And I'm looking back so I can look forward. And I am very, very grateful that I have family, I have friends, that I have the show, that I can express myself. I'm grateful that I have my church and my God to give me strength when I need it, and in the good times, that I'm grateful for the blessings that have come my way. I just had my granddaughter to my house. My son and my daughter-in-law came, and they stayed for a couple of days, and I got to play with that sweet, beautiful little baby. Absolutely wonderful. She's smiling and laughing. I took her for a walk. She's, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, 14, 15 months old, and she's smiling. She can say pop, because that's what I am, pop. She calls me pop. And, you know, she plays music on the little toys we gave her. I am so grateful for life. I am so grateful that I'm still here. I'm so grateful for my mother and father and for my wife and my children. And I think it's important that we stop once in a while and really think about the good things we have in our life, because we can always hang on the bad. Let's think about the good. So that's what I'm gonna ask you. What's good in your life? What's good that you can look back on and say, I'm really grateful for that. How do I pay it forward? That's a good idea. Let's do that going forward. Let's make things better, right? This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice. We'll be back in a minute with round two.
My fellow Americans, our mission here at AmericaOutloud.com is clear. We're here to defend our founding values and principles at a moment when they are under unprecedented assault. And to cover the news objectively and offer intelligent commentary on the challenges we face as a nation. You can tune in and join our family of listeners 24/7 in this vital crusade. Our apps are on Apple, Android, or Alexa. Find us on iHeartRadio or our world-class media player. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are ready to blast off again. So we talked about gratitude in our last segment, and I appreciated you allowing me to wind my way through my thought process. Now I want to look forward a little bit and say, what is it that the world is changing into? Now, not the horrible things that we're afraid of, you know, the tax hikes and, you know, all that kind of nonsense. What is new and different out there that's going on? Well, right now, I can tell you, my company, True Security Design, we do training for schools, businesses, and for law enforcement. And we were really upset because with the shutdown, we had no ability to teach any students. And we were not really into the remote end of all of this. That's not where we were at. Well, over the course of the past 6 months, as the lockdowns took hold and students couldn't come out, we couldn't go anywhere, you know, trade shows were shut down. We're trying to figure a way to reinvent ourselves, to be at the cutting edge, to be at the curvature of the change. And one of the things we did is we're now creating training videos where we're taking the programs that I teach and we're turning them into videos, right? And we're going to put them out on our websites and all that so that people can still get the training that they want and need, only they don't have to do it in person. And the other side of that is we've started to do remote. Now, I'm going to say a few months ago, when the lockdown was easing, we saw that police academies started opening up. And we got word from a couple of the academies where we normally present our programs. And we were told, hey, you can have students back in the building again. Do you want to do classes? So we set up some classes. And next thing you know, we have students in the class. There's actually physical students sitting in the classroom, which was very exciting to be back, to be in front of an audience again, where you're interchanging and you're teaching and there's learning going on, which I love. But then we noticed that some of the students, their bosses would call and say, hey, listen, even though we know the academy's open and you're going to do this class, we're not really comfortable having our officers go down there and sit in a room where there could be other people that got COVID. We can't afford to lose our personnel to COVID because they're in a classroom. Do you do remote? So we said, okay, let's see, how can we do that? You know, innovate, change, think of things, figure out the world. So we got a corporate account on one of the platforms that allow you to teach remotely. And we started doing our classes as a hybrid. We had, you know, 10 or 15 students in the classroom physically. And then we had another 10 or 15 or 20 at home or in their place of work or wherever they were doing it from. And it became an interesting new way to teach. I had to learn how to do this. So it was interesting. What I did is I had a big monitor. I got a big monitor so I could see all the faces at home, much bigger than like on a computer screen. And then I would have the live students. And I started to call them the home team and the in-person team, right? Because that's what Miss Kathy wanted me to call them so I don't confuse them. The home team and the in-person team. And I wouldn't really pit them against one another. But what I did was when I would be teaching, because I'm a walk-around kind of a teacher. I'm Italian, so I use my hands. You know, I tell a lot of stories to fill in points. And as I'm doing this, I notice I'm walking around the room, and I would get in front of the monitor, and I would look into the camera, and I would talk right to those students at home. I started asking questions. Let's go to the home team, right? And I would ask them a question. Everybody in the classroom could hear it. Then I would ask, oh, let the in-person team, and I was kind of pitting them one against the other for a little competition. It got to be fun. And after the end of the first, I don't know, three or four times we did this, we do a survey after every class because I want to know, did you like it? Can I do better? Is there something I can do better next time? Whatever. And then we asked the remote students specific questions about being remote students. Now, if anyone out there has done any of this remote stuff on Zoom or GoToMeeting or any of the platforms that are out there, you know that sitting there for an hour, 2 hours can sometimes be like boring, as unbelievable boring, because you sit there, you know, you're not really engaged. The person is sitting at the other end, they're just showing you PowerPoints, so you're going round and round. It can really be grating to try and go sit through those kind of meetings. I did not want that to be my class. So we do all this interactive stuff. We ask questions back and forth. And when we put this survey out, we wanted to know, what did you think? Because some of them were two-day classes. So it was about 7 hours of learning time each day, and we would ask the question, you know, what did you think of the remote? Was it easy to get in? Did you find it interactive? Did it hold your attention? And we were prepared, in all honesty. My classes always get either rated excellent or above average, right? That's what we're used to, that because we put a lot of time and effort and quality into doing a good class. But we expected, let's go, we're going to get a 50-50 return on this. Some people, 50% are going to say, eh, it was okay, boring like the rest of them. The other 50% might say, eh, wasn't as bad as we thought. That's what we were hoping for. Well, we got these surveys back, and every one of them, except for one, has been excellent. One was above average. The rest have all been excellent. Probably by now, 80 or 90 students have sat through our classes doing it remote. And I asked, you know, in the questions is, you know, what made it good or what made it bad? And they all said it was interactive. It felt like somebody talking to me. I didn't feel like I was alone sitting in a room staring at a screen. This is the new world. This is the new wave of the future. And I am so happy that I can be a part of that, that I'm, you know, innovating here, trying to come up with things. So now we're looking at more ways to become interactive. There's a platform that we're looking at now that I'm not going to give the name of it right now, but there's a platform we're looking at now that integrates, you know, all of the dynamics you want, video, PowerPoint, live action. I use role players, so I have to bring role players in to interact with the people at home. That was not an easy challenge, but they're professional actors. So basically, they played their parts into the camera, and they got to react back and forth with the students. And the students found that to be really amazing and challenging and fun for them. So this new world, you know, while some things are changing and we can be down on the changes, we can also look and say, is there anything good going on? And I'm telling you right now, this remote learning, the better we can make it, the more interactive we can make it, this is the future of learning. Now, eventually, the world's going to come back together. We don't know when that is. It could be spring, could be summer, could be next fall. Dr. Fauci, what's he say? 2021. Let's look at 2021. Let's look at 2022. 2022 is when we're going to be getting together, right? That's a long time from now, right? Whatever changes we see, some of them are going to stick. And I think this remote learning is going to stick. It's given me a lot of respect for teachers, you know, high school teachers, K through 12 teachers, college professors that are out there trying to maintain their world, trying to maintain their connection to their students and to teach that they're all remote now. You know, I told you, my son Jack's in high school, and basically he goes to school one day a week, and then the rest of the time it's remote. My daughter's in college, and basically it's all remote. You know, they're not doing any live in-person training or teaching with the college students where she goes to school. So it's been a different world, and I have a new respect for these people. And I'm going to tell you that, you know, if you know a teacher and they're doing it remote, thank them, because it's not easy. You know, to sit in front of a camera and do something like this, they do it every single day, all day long, right? I teach a class two, maybe three times a week. These men and women are out there doing it all day, every day. So I'm really impressed with the teachers, professors that are out there doing it. I just took a course from Fairleigh Dickinson University, and it was all online. And I got to tell you, I'm going to throw a shout out there to Dr. Michelle Bartow. She is absolutely a tremendous college professor and instructor. Not only did she adapt to this new world of remote, but she took into account that we were adult learners, right? We're at home. We all have work to do. Plus, we're trying to do college courses and all that, pursuing degrees, right? Higher degrees. She was excellent. So if anybody knows Dr. Michelle Bartow from the Fairleigh Dickinson University, you could tell Lieutenant Joe is very appreciative of her teaching style. I learned some things from her on how to do remote. She is absolutely tremendous. She's a gem. Made the class easy to understand, made the remote learning fun. And like I said, she taught me some things. So hey, the world is changing. Are you part of that change? We can lament the negativity, but if you're only going to lament negativity, you're not going to get anywhere, because that's really not what life is all about. So I asked a friend of mine to come on. He's a nurse up in the Boston area. And the reason I asked him to come on the show, and I don't know that he can, because he's working in the hospital, and he's going to try and reach out and connect to us while he's on a break. I don't know if we're going to get him on or not. I haven't used his name because I don't know if he wants me to use his name. But I'll tell you right now, a tremendous young man, and he is right in the midst of this whole COVID-19 thing. And the reason that I wanted him to come on is because you know my attitude since the beginning of this, when I said Miss Kathy and I were declaring our Independence Day like May 20th. We said we were tired of being locked down from March, you know, to May 20th. We were going out into the world. And I'm telling you, I got some nasty grams. I got on social media, I had people attacking me. You know, how dare I want to go out? I'm a killer. I want to kill people. Unbelievable. Well, that has kind of passed. And people have kind of gotten through the summer where things did loosen up a bit. I mean, even here in New Jersey, we had indoor dining. That seems like such an amazing thing, indoor dining. But we had indoor dining. You could go into a restaurant. You could see other people. There was people sitting at the bar having a cocktail, and you could have your food, and it kind of felt almost like a normal world. You had the option of the outdoor dining, which, again, you see, here's another innovative change. All these restaurants now have this outdoor dining, which I always thought it was cool. You go to New York City, and you sit outside, and you have your meal in nice weather. But now, because the only way they can stay open for their dining is outdoors, they all got heaters. They got these heaters inside these giant tents, and it's actually temperate. It's nice and warm. You're still outside, but it's comfortable. You can sit there and eat, and you can still go out. Well, I find that to be an innovative change that's probably going to stay with us because it's actually kind of nice. On nice weather, they have live music outside. It was really cool. I digress, as a man with a grievance often does. But as we see these lockdowns continuing to now tighten up again, we're going to start to see, where is all this going to go? You know, what's going to change in our lives permanently, or do we get to go back out again? So that's what I want you to look at. You know, where are you? Are you part of the change? Or, as we say at the end of this program, be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem, right? So I'm trying to be a part of the solution here. It's interesting to watch these kind of changes and how they're happening because you don't know what's going to happen next. You know, what's next on the horizon? Which way is this election going to go? We still don't know, do we? It's kind of looking more and more like, even President Trump said it, he has the facts on his side, he doesn't have the clock on his side, and that clock is ticking. And when they get to January 21st, they're going to swear in whoever has been declared the president. And I think that's probably going to be Joe Biden. I don't know if that's right or not, whether he should be, but that looks like he probably is going to be. And then we're going to have to move along as a country with President Biden and whatever he wants to do. So these changes that are coming at us, you know, more and more people are listening to radio than ever before. More and more people are listening to, well, just look at this. America Out Loud is a tremendous talk radio station, and we are internet-based. We're podcast-based, right? We're not on terrestrial radio. You don't open or turn on a radio and find us. People actually are coming to find us in droves. The station is growing by leaps and bounds because of all the awesome programming that's on here. This is an innovation. AmericaOutLoud.com is an innovation that has had a great growth during this lockdown because people are searching for information. They want to hear voices. They want to see what's going on. They want opinion. And the internet has really opened the world. The digital world has changed all of our lives. So if you can hear in my voice some kind of excitement here, you're absolutely right because I am excited about the future and things changing. Rudy Giuliani said something a long time ago after 9/11. They asked him how he could stay so calm. And again, I'll paraphrase, but I've used this many times after I heard him say this. He says, the crazier situation gets, the calmer you have to become. Otherwise, you will lose out. So I said, okay, let me take that to heart. So when things get crazy, I get calmer. When things look really depressed, I try and look for the silver lining. I try to move forward. And that's kind of where I am now, looking at innovation and change and how can I be a part of it. Well, there's Arthur. Arthur, what do you got to say? You're going to be innovative? Too bad we can't get robots to walk the dogs. That might be something, right? That would be interesting. All right, come here. You want to come and say hi? Come on over here. All right, would you like to have a robot walk you around, Arthur? Arthur's our rescue boy. He makes an appearance once in a while when he wants to say hi to me. He doesn't think he's getting enough attention. And we love Arthur around here. Arthur was a rescue. from down south, southern United States, and he was in an all kill shelter, and he came up here, and Miss Kathy was, she was taking dogs in that were in had scheduled they were in kill shelters, and they would come up here, and she would not adopt them, but she would take care of them until they found an owner, right? So she would rescue them from the kill shelters. And we had a whole bunch of these wonderful, beautiful dogs. And one of them that came along was our guy Arthur right here. Right, Arthur? Arthur's a beautiful shepherd lab kind of a mix. He's a sweet boy. And I'll tell you, he's made a difference in our family. So that's an innovation, right? People saw a problem. They saw these dogs in kill shelters. And what are we going to do with them? You know, just they're living creatures. Maybe let's bring them somewhere. Let's rescue them. That became a big deal. And I even got involved in it. We have Arthur. We kept Arthur because he fit in with our family. So innovation can be all around us, right? Innovation and change is what the future is. It's going to make the future good. That's what's going to make the future good. It's going to make it better. The COVID, look at these doctors and these medical, these scientists that went out and had to fast track a vaccine. Now, I don't know what the vaccine's going to be. I don't know how it's going to work. It seems to be pretty promising, right? If we have a vaccine for this thing in less than a year, that's amazing that we have scientists that can do that in a pinch. Maybe they'll learn something from this. Maybe along with President Trump's Right to Try program, maybe we can find cures for cancer and for other diseases that are killing people every single day. Maybe for Alzheimer's. Who knows? We have to be willing to look forward and see what else is going on. All right? So that's kind of where I'm at here today. I'm enjoying myself. I'm looking forward to the future. I got my buddy Arthur here with me. I know he drives the station people crazy when he barks like that, but he's just trying to let me know he's here, that he's sitting over there and he wants some more petting, or he wants a snack or something. But I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad you're here. And together, we are marching forward one way or another. Whatever's going to come is going to come. We're going to deal with it. So we can be positive or we can be negative. Negative only leads to negative. Positive can make a bad situation good. Might take some time, might take some effort on our part, might take some soul searching, whatever. We can do it. We can move forward. This difficulty, this challenge is really that. It is a challenge. How do we get through this? How do we, on the right, those of us who are more conservative, how do we deal with the changes that might be coming that we're not happy about? Well, we have hope. And we say we have the Supreme Court. We have at least a 5-4 majority now that are going to do the right thing. That's something to be hopeful for, my friends. There's always hope if we can find it. We're in the season of hope. Let's see if we can find that in each other, right? Let's be positive as we're going forward. And we'll be back in a minute to talk about some more good stuff going forward. Remember, we're going to be part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. We'll be back in a minute.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free 2-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
Welcome back. Okay, so I kind of got lost in segment two there. You know, you see, I get all these things. I have all these notes here. I got three computers going at the same time. I'm trying to spend time with Arthur. I'm looking forward to things. I really want to talk to everybody out there. I got text messages coming in. So this is a real communication central going on here at Chasing Justice. The young man I was telling you about, he's a nurse in the Boston area. And the reason I want him to come on, and that's where I got sidetracked, because I started talking about the COVID and how it can be nasty and we don't want it to be. he said something on social media. He made a comment about you people out here in the world who are not involved in the medical world or the hospitals really have no idea what's going on with the COVID. He said he sees people who are saying it's fake, it's a hoax, it's a this and that. He says, but my hospital is filled, we are overwhelmed, and it's really terrible. It's worse than it was back in the spring. Now, that's a pretty big thing to say, because remember in the spring, we were scared to death. It was the end of the world. Everyone was going to die. People were dying, thousands and thousands of people a day, right? So I reached out to this young man, and I said, listen, I'd like you to come on and tell us, what is it really like in your hospital? Not what we're hearing stories pro or against it, whether it's politically tinted or not. What's going on? And like I said, I don't know if he's going to be able to come on. He's working and he's doing like 12-hour shifts plus overtime every day. What he told me is this. He says, Joe, what you don't understand is that our hospitals are getting filled to capacity. Our rural hospitals, city hospitals, all across the country, slow and steady, we're filling up to capacity, that we don't have room for people with other problems, right? So the COVID is really because people went out and they're getting sick and tired, they're getting COVID fatigue, they're not wearing masks, they're not social distancing, and the virus is very communicable, it's spreading quickly. He said, so now the hospitals are filled, you do have people who are very, very sick. He says, and I'm seeing younger people now in here, where before we had, you know, the older people. So my answer to him was, I said, listen, what we heard back in the spring was that we had to go 15-day lockdown to flatten the curve, right? So that we would protect our hospitals and our healthcare facilities so they weren't overwhelmed. And we did that. And now we're in month seven, right? We're going to month eight, whatever we're going into here, nine. We flattened the curve. Deaths were going down. What's the story now? Are deaths way up again? I mean, are people dying by the hundreds of thousands like they keep telling us? He said, no. The reality is that we have done a lot to protect our older population. We've learned what we need to do for them, how we can isolate them away from it and protect them. But now the hospitals are filling up with people who are middle-aged and younger, and they're not dying as quickly or in the same numbers as they were. But we're finding that the disease actually has a lot of other ancillary things to it. Like if you had an underlying heart condition you didn't know about, it can affect your cardiac system, right? And it can affect your lung system. It can affect other parts of your body in ways that this is brand new disease. We're just finding out now there can be long-term effects for people who don't die from it, but are suffering from it. And that's what the hospitals are filling up with now. So according to this young man, his hospital is just about at capacity, and they are afraid with the coming winter and the regular flu that's going to, you know, jump in here any minute now. When you combine the two, our systems will be overwhelmed. And that's why he's saying, listen, wear the mask, social distance. Nobody wants to do it. Doesn't mean we have to shut down our world, but we really need to be smart. And I think that is probably the best message to come out of this. We need to be smart. Because I don't think we can lock down solid again. I don't think it's possible to lock down solid again. You know, I don't know that I can do it anymore, you know, to stay in my house and not do anything. I'll do smart stuff, right? I'll do smart things. I'll wear the mask when I go out. But is it really a good mask? Does the mask really help? You know, who was it? Trying to think of the doctor's name. And I'm sorry I don't have these names at the tip of my fingers. You know, when I make my notes, I write notes down about what I want to talk about, and then I come across other things as I'm going. This doctor was on a medical show I was listening to, and basically what he said was, the masks, unless you have a really high-end mask, the size of the germ, of the COVID germ, the microbe, right, is smaller than what the mask can prevent. So it might be doing some good, but it's certainly not doing the good that everybody thinks it's doing, right? But what's happening on the other end is that your oxygen levels go down when you wear this mask, right? If you wear it for a prolonged amount of time, you notice that your oxygen levels go down. You're breathing out the carbon dioxide, you're breathing it back in again. He said, so that's causing problems for people that we don't realize. When I was saying before, we're starting to see this PTSD. We personally know somebody here who has reached out to us and said, hey, listen, you know, we went through this whole COVID thing, and my daughter, who's a teenager, is now really, really depressed. over not being at school, not being around her friends, not being around people her own age, being locked away. You know, everything on the internet is all that there is for this kid. And, it's, you know, what can we do? And I don't know. I don't have that answer. You know, Miss Kathy and I, we talk about it. And, you know, we're trying to keep our kids going. My son and his wife, my other son and his wife, they're dealing with it differently. They're more concerned about it. They do stay locked down. My son Joe, he goes out in the world. He has to work, right? He's out in the world doing things, and he can't always avoid it. Plus, he has that little baby. So he's trying to be safe and careful and not too cautious, not to the point where it disrupts their entire life. My son and daughter are still in school, and they're doing everything online. You know, they have their groups of friends that everybody's healthy, but the reality is this thing could come to you from anywhere. You know, that's one of the concerns. You know, a couple weeks ago, the police academy opened up. I was telling you before, earlier, and we started teaching hybrid. Well, I'd have 15, 20 students live in the class, and then a bunch of students online. Well, we did a class on a Tuesday, and then probably the next Wednesday, so it was like a week and a day after the class, we got a call from one of the students that said, "Hey, just to let you know, I tested positive for COVID, and I probably had it when I was in the classroom." Now, the academy had a rule. You have to wear your masks when you're in the classroom, which was good. But we had to then call all the students and tell them, just so you know, 8 days ago, somebody in class with all of us tested positive for COVID. Now, luckily, me, the instructors, nobody in the class got it. But it could be anywhere is my point. You don't know, you know, from day to day. You can get tested today and you're good. And then tomorrow, if you took another test, you'd be positive. So care and carefulness is what we have to do. But we need real information, right? We get all these, everything is politicized so bad, you can't really tell if it's, is it as deadly as it was? As my friend, the nurse, says, it's bad, but it's not as deadly as it was, but it's still affecting us in other ways. Or is it going to kill everybody, like they want us to believe, so that they can lock us down? What's the purpose of the lockdown? I don't know, and I'm trying to figure it out. You see, there's another part of the theme here today. You know, this week, we're trying to figure things out. Where are we going to go? But I want it to be innovative. I want it to be different. I want it to be fun. I want to look forward, and that's kind of what I'm doing. How about this, though? Here's a blast from the past that we haven't talked about in a while that I think deserves a little attention. Whatever happened to the coup d'etat and Attorney General Barr's investigation? Remember we were going to get that in the summer, and then we were going to get it because of the COVID, we were going to get it in September, and then it was too close to the elections. Well, we're past the election now, except for the counting and the fraud and all the other nonsense. Where's that investigation? What happened here? Who did what? I'm seeing John Brennan again running around. He's going to get another position in the Biden administration. Here's a guy that might be indicted for what he did. But maybe not, because we might not get this report at all. Am I going to be proved right when I said way back in the beginning of the year that we might hear, well, there's a lot of things that went wrong here, and there's a whole bunch of unindicted co-conspirators, but no one's getting locked up? Is that what's going to happen? Are we going to get that when, in February or March? You don't think that's going to be shut down by the new attorney general if it's the Biden administration? Where is this report and how come we don't have it? As American citizens, don't we deserve to know what happened here? Now let's connect the dots. You had this major deep state operation coming right out of the White House, President Obama's knowledge, Joe Biden's knowledge, that they were faking up a coup d'etat against candidate Trump and then President-elect Trump and then President Trump. And they tried to use the power of the United States to go after this man, to destroy him, to ruin him, to take away the right of everyone who voted for him to have him as their president. That's what happened. At least that's what seems like happened. Then we saw we're going to have a big investigation. It's going to be a big investigation. Attorney General Barr is going to go after this. He's going to cut. This guy is squared away as they can be. They said that about Mueller too, right? He's squared away as could be, and he was a fraud as well. But now we haven't gotten the answers yet. Are we ever going to get the answers here? When we get them, are they going to be anticlimactic? Does anybody even remember this anymore? You don't hear about this. There's nothing on the news. You don't hear anywhere. Can we even count on, is there a news organization out there we can count on? Other than the voices you hear on America Out Loud, where are you getting any information? Fox News is no longer a conservative stalwart out there. They're not out there giving, looking at both sides. They've kind of leaned to the left now. That seems to be the John Roberts phenomenon. You get in there and everybody leans to the left eventually. Where is this investigation? We don't even talk about it. People have completely forgotten about it as though it never happened. This was the most important criminal action that has taken place in our country since the time of the Civil War. And not one word. We had one low-level FBI guy who pled guilty to changing a FISA warrant, but nothing else. Like I said, you got Brennan running around talking. You got Clapper talking again. You got John Kerry back in the government. I'm not saying he was involved in that, but he's just another deep stater. You got these guys all over. The deep state's all coming back. This is what they wanted. You know, the Republicans, the weak Republicans, they wanted Trump out. They want to go back to the deep state network where the Republicans are happy to be second fiddle to the Democrats. They just have good lifestyles. That's all they care about. Is that what we're going to settle for this? What about all the rioting that took place and the cities that were destroyed? We've forgotten all of this. All of this has kind of just moved on like it never happened. And the problem is, not that we moved on. Moving on is good. Once there's closure, once there's accountability, then you move on. You figure out what happened so it can never happen again, and you move on. Look at the voting situation. There may have been massive voter fraud. Or maybe there wasn't. But we're not going to get to the bottom of it. We're not even going to investigate it. We're just going to let it go until the next time. Well, you know, the next time is in January when they have the runoff election in Georgia. And they've already got 750,000 ballots requested. 750,000 ballots requested. Whatever happened to those hundreds of thousands of ballots that only had Joe Biden's name on them? Where'd they come from? Were they real? Did people only vote for Joe Biden? They voted for nobody else on the ticket. Hundreds of thousands of votes. Now, I want to be as accurate as I can. I heard it was 125,000 votes, right? 125,000 votes came in with only Joe Biden's name circled or stamped or whatever it is that they do on the ballot. And none for Trump or very, very few. How is that possible? That not only that there's not so many for Trump. Okay, just say all the people who wanted him were liberals and they wanted Joe Biden. Okay, no down ballot. They didn't vote down the ballot. They didn't vote for senator. They didn't vote for congressman. They didn't vote for dog catcher. They only voted for Joe Biden and sent it in. They didn't care about anything else. Does that seem reasonable? Does that seem, well, I guess that's how it would be. You have a ballot in front of you, which is really my theory is why there was more people voting this time than ever before. It's because they actually had the ballot in their hand. You could just fill it out, put it in the mail, and send it back, as opposed to having to get in your car, you know, drive to the polling place, wait in line, go in and push the buttons. So I could see where people just have the ballot in their house, they're going to fill it out and send it in. I get that. That's why there's more voting. That seems to make sense to me. But how come all those votes with no down ballot? So these people who cared so much to vote for Joe Biden didn't want to give him the Congress, didn't want to give him the Senate? And how is it that these millions of votes across the country that went the opposite way of Donald Trump, but also elected more Republicans to the House of Representatives than we had in years, right? How does that happen? How do you say, no, we don't want Trump, but we do want these Republican congressmen down here? Does that pass the smell test to you? Don't you even see that there's something suspicious about that? Now, what I've learned in my life is that just because one thing looks one way doesn't mean it's not something else, all right? It can look totally suspicious. And when you really investigate it, turns out, okay, it's not. It looked suspicious, but it's not. But we're not even looking. We're not even going to take the time to investigate this. Just like the coup d'etat, it's just going to disappear. And that's going to be the way it is. And now we're going to see, well, this is how we're going to do the voting from now on. If there was fraud, there will always be fraud on such a scale. which is why, always been my theory, why our friends on the left wanted this, because you can manipulate this. You can have thousands and thousands of ballots off to the side, all pre-marked for who you want, and you just send them in, you know, like a dump. Imagine in the middle of the night, just a truck rolls up and dumps hundreds of thousands. Oh, wait a minute. That's exactly what happened. Isn't that funny? That's exactly what happened. Exactly what you would anticipate if you were going to pick a way to fraud up an election. This is how you would do it. And all the naysayers all along were saying, there's no evidence of fraud. There's no evidence of fraud. No evidence of fraud. We've had balloting like this forever. Well, when you requested a ballot because you were going to be away, they knew who you were. You were a registered voter. They sent you a ballot. They didn't mass mail hundreds of millions of ballots to people that could be faked up, harvested, stolen, cured, rechecked, right? Reprinted. We had never done this before. This was the first time. And look at the mess we have. If this doesn't wake us up to say we have to do something about it, if not for this time, even if this was stolen, what are we going to do for the next time? What's our innovation going to be? What's our innovation going to be for the future? How do we fix this? Because there is a way to fix it. You know, we live in a land of technology companies that are absolutely amazing, cutting edge everything. We can't figure a way to do a secure, positive voting system so that we know for sure we got the right result, like quickly and not for months later. We can't do that. I was joking around saying, you know, American Idol can tally 100 million votes during a commercial break. We can't do this for something as important as President of the United States and how our government is going to run? I don't know. I think innovation and technology may be the answer. But I know that having all of these paper ballots has been a nightmare. It's not right. Where's the Attorney General Barr investigation? What happened in this election? These are the questions we need to look at going forward. We need to all pay attention, right? So, our lessons for today: be grateful for the things we have. Look forward from difficulty to challenge. Look to find a way to make it better. Be hopeful. Seek the truth. And remember, always be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro for Chasing Justice, and we'll be back again with another episode before you know it. See you here every weekday at 3 p.m. on America Out Loud Radio.